You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Bill and Melinda Gates are getting a divorce. If you're finding this out for me, you're the last to know. So glad you're coming out of that coma. And while we're talking, I've got some really sad news for you about Jeff and Mackenzie Bezos, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee, Liza Minnelli and David Guest, Princess Margaret and Lord Snowden, George IV and Carolina Brunswick, all divorced. Anyway, I really don't have much to say about the Gates divorce. Billions of pixels have been pumped out about it over the last couple of weeks. And I'm sorry, I don't have any special insights. I've lived in Seattle for decades, but I've never met Bill or Melinda Gates. The closest I've come is biking past the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation building downtown. It's okay. Not a blight on the landscape, but certainly not a building preservationists are going to be fighting to save in 100 years. But I did want to weigh in on this. Megan Stack, a journalist at the LA Times, tweeted this out after Bill and Melinda announced that they could no longer grow together as a couple. Sometimes there's that one small detail about a famous person that sticks with you for years, and for me it's been that Bill Gates negotiated into his marriage the right to take an annual beach house weekend with his ex-girlfriend. Okay, to be clear and to be fair, Stack only shared a fact about Gates that had been stuck in her head for a long time, a fact about Bill and Melinda that they had shared publicly. Stack herself didn't make any value judgments, she didn't cast any aspersions, throw any stones. Her followers and the people who saw her tweet after it went viral, on the other hand, they did. A lot of people thought this detail told us everything we needed to know about Bill Gates. Only a terrible person would make such a demand. And everything we needed to know about Bill and Melinda Gates' marriage, obviously doomed from the start. Okay, this detail that Bill asked Melinda if he could continue his tradition of getting together with an ex once a year over a three-day weekend, it's from a 1997 Time magazine profile of Gates. I just read the whole thing. If you read this epic, really long 20-year-old piece, which is more than everyone out there tweeting about it did, if you read it, you'll learn that Bill's ex is a software entrepreneur like Bill and a venture capitalist, 5 years his senior. They broke up long before he met Melinda, and they appear to have had more of an intellectual connection than a sexual one. Bill and his ex were rarely in the same place at the same time, and their idea of a hot date, according to Time, was to go to the same movie at the same time in their respective cities and then talk about it on the phone after. Hot. And according to Gates, on those weekend getaways, he and his ex liked to play putt-putt and discuss biotechnology. If I were Melinda, I'd be only too delighted not to be invited. Look, Bill Gates may be a terrible person. I think you should just assume anyone with billions of dollars is a terrible person. Like Balzac said, behind every great fortune lies a great crime. So while I've never met a billionaire, if I ever do, certainly if I ever date one, my plan is to assume that he or she could happen. My plan is to assume that this billionaire who's dating me is a terrible person and be pleasantly surprised if they're not, or experience the joy of having my priors confirmed if they are. And really, there's nothing sweeter than having your priors confirmed, am I right? So yeah, Bill Gates may be a terrible person, but this anecdote, it isn't proof. His friendship with Jeffrey Epstein, on the other hand, that comes closer in my mind. But here are a few things we know for sure about the Gates marriage. It worked for 27 years. Bill's request to take those getaways with his ex didn't destroy their marriage. Their marriage would have ended before it began 27 or 8 years ago if Melinda couldn't tolerate these trips, assuming she even gave a shit about them. And contra almost everyone on Twitter, it's possible that this accommodation, this allowance, is what made it possible for Bill and Melinda Gates to be together all this time. Sometimes people are friends with their exes. Sometimes people hook up with their exes every once in a while with the consent of their currents. Some marriages are open, and even if Bill and his ex were fucking, and my close reading of that Time magazine piece says they weren't, I don't think they were fucking when they were together, but even if they were, that doesn't mean the Gates marriage was doomed or a lie. Some marriages are open, some are wide open, some are open just a crack, some have very narrow carve-outs. And for all we know, Melinda had a carve-out or two request of her own going in. Look, Bill and Melinda had a good run. Their kids are adults. They eradicated polio together. By any metric, this connection, this marriage, was a success, even if they both got out of it alive. And those weekends away with his ex may have made that success possible for all anyone who isn't Bill or Melinda Gates knows. Look, I understand the temptation to look at a marriage that's ending and try to identify the one simple reason why it's ending. I have to resist that urge in myself. But looking for a sign that Bill and Melinda Gates' marriage was doomed from the start, or the marriage of George IV and Caroline of Brunswick was doomed from the start, looking for a sign like that, you know, it doesn't make your marriage any safer or stronger. And that's really what's going on in the responses to Megan Stack's tweet about Bill Gates asking Melinda for her permission, for her consent, to see his ex every once in a while. Oh, look at them getting divorced. Well, you know, they did this thing we would never do, or she agreed to this thing I would never agree to. So, of course, they're getting divorced 27 years later. That won't happen to me. My marriage is safe. Look, here's my advice. It's bad luck to whistle past the world's second most densely populated graveyard. The place where we bury our marriages is only second to the place where we bury ourselves. So to anyone out there who heard this detail about the Gates marriage and then thought or tweeted, doomed from the start, but not me, not mine, because we would never. Yeah. If you're still together after 3 decades, and while together, you and your spouse eradicated a disease that had plagued mankind for centuries, then you can make judgments and throw stones. Until then, you can shut the fuck up. Okay, coming up on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. More questions, more guests, no ads for Magnum subscribers. One of our favorite sex educators, Dr. Debbie Herbenik, joins us to answer some questions about multiple orgasms and sex headaches. That's on the Magnum. Tons of your Q's, lots of my A's on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast. All that coming up right now. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free. Go to thepillclub.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, Dan. This is a cis female in Los Angeles, California, 38 years old, and I have a bit of a pandemic quarantine success story. I know we're coming out of it a little bit now, and I think I'm getting the equivalent of a late night sup text that can only happen during a pandemic. So far, I am up to 5 guys who've been hookups in the past who have sent me a photo of their vaccination card with the message, "How are you? I'm vaxxed," or something like that. I wonder if this is happening to other women. And I find it really funny, and I think it's a success, both in that, past hookups like me, but also we're coming out of it and people are getting vaxxed. I hope other people are getting these messages, but I also think it's pretty funny as a cultural phenomenon.
Thank you for calling to share what is more of an impending success story than a success story, but I will allow it in the hopes that it encourages other people out there to get vaccinated, because I'm vaxxed is going to be the new you up. Don't miss out on the Whoring 20s, people. Get vaxxed now and give us a call if you have a success story to share, and we might open next week's Lovecast with your success story.
Hey, Dan, 30s, male, East Coast. Quickie for you here. This is on the issue of ghosting. I'm trying to be a more responsible dater, and I've moved away from ghosting, which is a practice that I undertook in the past. I'm not proud of it, but I did it. It was the easy way out. But regarding this, let's say I see someone once, you know, we meet her online, we go out for a coffee date. Am I allowed to basically, do I owe that person an explanation of like, hey, listen, I'm not interested, or is it kind of just understood? So I guess like, is ghosting conditional on the length that you know the person? I dated someone 4 times. I had a virtual date and 3 in-person dates. It just seems like it's not going where I wanted it to, and I'm not interested. I feel like I'm not ghosting the person because I haven't followed up since our last date, but neither has she, right? And if she did, I would respond. So I wouldn't just ignore her, but I feel like I'm not that interested, and she seems to not be, she's not reaching out to me. So maybe we can just leave it where it is. Both sides kind of have a implicit understanding. Is that fair? Is that a fair understanding of it? Or should, do I still need to reach out and say, hey, I'm not interested? Or would that maybe just kind of cause unnecessary harm if it's already seemingly implied?
Is it the easy way out? Really? Ghosting? I've never ghosted anyone that I can recall and I'm aware of. Maybe back in the rotary dial days, I didn't return a phone call. I don't want to get deposed, or I don't want somebody coming out of the woodwork to accuse me of being a hypocrite. But I don't see ghosting as necessarily the easy way out, at least personally, because I would be worried if I ghosted on someone that I had been seeing and just stopped returning their calls and fell off the face of the earth, that I would run into that person at the gym, at a bar, at a club, in an airport, now that airports are things we can go to again. And I would be so stressed out by the possibility of running into somebody that I not only didn't want to see again, and that's awkward enough to begin with, but then I compounded that, not wanting to see them again, with the assholery of just going silent and not returning their calls or responding to their texts. Because I wouldn't want that person, you know, if you dump somebody and you run into them in public months or even a year or two later, you're probably going to get a bit of a dagger look. But if you ghosted on them, you're going to get daggers on steroids flying at you from across the room. And karma being what karma is, and I'm not a spiritual person, the odds that if you run into somebody that you ghosted at the airport, the odds of you being seated next to each other on that flight seem to me to be high. So the stress of having to worry about running into somebody I've ghosted would make ghosting seem to me, at least, not to be the easy way out. As for the, you know, not responding after one coffee date, again, you know, if you don't hear from them in a day or two and they haven't heard from you in a day or two, mutual disinterest has probably been established. I think etiquette demands and good behavior demands that you send a brief message. It was really nice to meet you. Thank you for your time. I didn't feel like we connected. You seem like a great person. I wish you well. How hard is it to send that message? Now I know that if you are a woman and you send that message, you're likely to get an argument. You're very likely to get a response from a guy, one of those guys who believes that you're not allowed to stop dating him without his permission. You don't need anybody's permission to stop dating them. Getting dumped, as I've said a million times, is the only thing in love and relationship land where consent is irrelevant, or the other person's consent is irrelevant. If somebody argues with you about a text like that, nice to meet you, thank you for your time, I don't feel like we connected, that just confirms that you made the right decision, or that your assessment of them from that coffee date was the correct one, and you don't want to see them again, you shouldn't want to see them again, and you made the right call. Now, the situation you described, where you went on a coffee date, you went on 3 dates, you weren't feeling it, you got the impression they weren't feeling it, and neither of you has reached out, I guess that's not felony ghosting, right? Felony ghosting is when, you know, you've been on a date or 2 or 3, and someone follows up with you about making plans for another date, or about plans you made on your last date to get back together again, and you just don't respond. That is felony ghosting. That is a crime. You should go to jail. If you went out on 3 dates and you didn't reach out and they didn't reach out, that's kind of mutual ghosting. But again, I would circle back to not the easy way out, if only because you don't want to live with the stress of running into them again. You want to do the right thing. You want to, even if they haven't reached out to you to say, hey, thank you for your time, nice to meet you, not feeling it, even if you suspect they're not feeling it either, I think you should send that text. You should make that really small effort to be a human being, if not only to protect yourself against the, you know, super serious daggers on steroids if you run into that person in public again, but, you know, it is just as you might run into that person again. It's a really small world. You might wind up dating someone that that person works with or from their wider social circle or their best friend. Those sorts of things do happen. And the last thing you want, if you've just started to see someone that you actually are into and want to keep seeing, is for that person to be best friends with or on really friendly co-working terms with or in the wider social circle of someone you ghosted, whether it was a felony ghosting or a mutual ghosting. You don't want that person to shit talk you to the new person that you just started seeing that they happen to know about what an asshole you were and that they didn't hear from you after the third date, or they reached out to you after the first coffee date and you just were silent. So I think you should err on the side of sending those polite, if awkward — they're awkward to send, they're much more awkward and uncomfortable to get — but those messages that say, hey, thank you for your time, not feeling it, didn't feel like you were feeling it either, I wish you well. It's not that hard. And then when you see him at the airport, or you see him at the gym, or you see him at the restaurant, you can give him a little nod without having to feel guilty about the ghosting on top of the rejection. Rejection can't be avoided. We all have our fair share coming to us. Ghosting can always be avoided. There's really no excuse for it. Send that text. Do you need to renew your birth control prescription? Want to switch your birth control? Maybe try birth control for the first time? Whether you know the brand you want or you want help finding the best option for you, the Pill Club medical team has your back. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free in discreet packaging. The Pill Club carries over 120 FDA-approved brands. Most brands of birth control are free with insurance or Medicaid. Otherwise, prices start as low as $9 per month without insurance. What's more, their licensed medical team is just a text away to give you the best reproductive health care. So skip the office and waiting in line at the pharmacy and join the club, the Pill Club. Right now, when you go to thepillclub.com/savage, the Pill Club is offering a $10 donation to bedsider.org for every Savage Lovecast listener who becomes a patient. Your donation will help low-income individuals get access to birth control through bedsider.org. That's thepillclub.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you to get your first birth control care package and donate $10 to help more people in need of affordable birth control. Remember, thepillclub.com/savage. You must use the link to make a donation.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 50-year-old woman and Colorado straight woman. I'm a huge fan of yours. I've been listening to you and reading your column for a long, long time. And really just decided I wanted to pick your brain on something that's been bugging me for a few years. Back when I was on the dating scene, I met a guy on some website and went on one date with him. In the course of that date, he shared with me that he liked to stretch out women's genitals, vagina, the whole, all of it. And I was so upset by it. I don't even remember the details. I just remember the way he described it sounded to me like he liked to mutilate women's bodies. And so I was openly horrified and told him I would never do anything like that. I never saw the guy again or talked to him again. And I just don't want to go down the rabbit hole of the internet with this one. I would love to hear what you have to say about it. Is this a thing? Is it a psychopath thing? Am I overreacting to something that's just kind of a normal kink for people that I just wasn't aware of?
Stretching, vaginal, anal, it's a thing. It's a thing some people like having done to their holes, not just a thing some people like doing to other people's holes. Dive onto dirty Twitter, take a deep dive into dirty Twitter, and it won't take you long to find examples of people doing this. Mostly, most of the videos you'll find are people doing this to themselves. Some of them are people doing it to others. It's definitely not, if we're talking about vaginal stretching here, anal stretching, not anal ripping or vaginal ripping or tearing, is not a psychopath thing. Although I'm sure there are some psychopaths out there who enjoy it. You could say the same about a lot of things, though. Deep dish pizza, not a psychopath thing, but some psychopaths like me really enjoy deep dish pizza. And The Masked Singer and Josh Hawley. There's lots of things out there that psychopaths and non-psychopaths enjoy. I want to back up for a second, though, before we continue to do our deep dive into stretching. You say you met this guy on some website and you went on a date. I'm curious as to whether this was a kink website or a vanilla website. Was it FetLife or was it Tinder. And that matters. If you met this guy on Tinder and you went on your first coffee date or your first date, and he immediately launches into, or very early in that date, launches into his kinks and he's talking about vaginal stretching, well, not sure if he's a psychopath, but definitely poor judgment, bad impulse control, no common sense. But if he met you on a kink site like FetLife, it may not have been out of bounds for him to bring up his kinks or his main kink early on in the date to see if, you know, it already having been established that you're both kinky because you met on FetLife, to, you know, toss your kinks out there on the table and see if you're kink compatible. If this horrifies you, I don't know why you want to hear more about it. And I don't see, you know, if just hearing about it horrified you, I don't see that there's much of a difference between hearing about it from some straight guy that you're never ever going to see again and hearing about it from the gay guy whose sex podcast you listen to every week, who you are going to hear from again. But if all you want me to do is confirm that you were right to run from this guy, indeed you were. Not because he's a psychopath necessarily. He could be, but this doesn't prove it. But because you were really not into this. You were really not into the way he rolled it out. You were really not into the assumptions he made about your sexual interest in him or your kinks, even if you met on FetLife. You were not a match. But again, vaginal stretching, anal stretching, some people with vaginas, some people with anuses are really into that. It's not about mutilation. It's about gradually working with and enjoying, both parties enjoying, larger and largest insertion toys. Again, stretching, if that's the word he used, it's not about tearing, it's not about ripping, it's not about pain. The vagina is very elastic and can accommodate large toys. That doesn't mean that large toys feel good for every woman or everyone who has a vagina or for everyone who has an anus. But for some folks, they do. For some, it's the physical sensation of being stretched. For some women, it's the pressure that a large toy can put on, you know, the root or wings of the clitoris that are, you know, deeply embedded in the body and run sometimes along the vaginal canal. And for some folks, it's the symbolism of, you know, having this giant thing in them. And that excites them, you know, in the quote unquote largest sex organ, the one between the ears. And of course, it's usually some combo of both the physical sensation of being stretched, of really being filled up, and the emotional, psychological, the, you know, erotic symbolism of taking such a large penetrative toy, of working your way up to being able to take larger toys and enjoy them. And I also want to say genital torture, shout out to the guys into CBT, cock and ball torture, and the women into inflicting CBT on the guys who are into it. And there are women out there who get off on labia torture. I think more people are comfortable with the phrase erotic genital torment, but the phrase people use in kinkland is genital torture, CBT, cock and ball torture. Also a thing that people enjoy, not psychopaths exclusively, a thing that non-psychopaths can and do enjoy with consenting partners who enjoy that activity as much as they do. But he didn't bring up erotic genital torment. He brought up stretching. Seems to me that you leapt to a conclusion about that having to be painful or unwelcome or not something that a person with a vagina or an anus that was into stretching could ever enjoy. You couldn't wrap your head in that instant where he blurted that out, perhaps inappropriately and without much common sense, without filters. You couldn't conceive of someone who might, you know, be the lid for his pot, someone who might be into what he was asking, inquiring if you were into. Those people are out there. You're not one of them. You are absolutely right to run from this guy, particularly if this was a Tinder match and not a FetLife hookup. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OMGYes.com, a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGYes has interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better, physical techniques, the psychological techniques, and ways of guiding their partners so that they can experience pleasure or more pleasure during sex. The findings are peer-reviewed and published. This is science. They are doing data. They're not just winging it. And all of this research and data and science is brought to life in fun, honest videos featuring regular women sharing stories, from their own experiences about what works for them and what might work for you. I've watched a bunch of these videos. They're really great. I think they're really valuable. I think they're a tremendous resource, and I think you should check them out. One of the things their research has found is how easy it is for us to blunt or cut off our own explorations when we think things like, I've already got techniques that work for me, I'm good. But finding out what works for other people can help you find new things, bonus things, additional things that work for you. Indiana University School of Medicine researchers actually did a study giving OMG yes to 1,000 women and their partners. 96% realized there's actually more room in their lives for sexual pleasure, more room for growth. OMG yes is not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book, that you keep and own forever. And your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research at IU and the Kinsey Institute. Learn more about the study at omgyes.com. And our listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. Do yourself a favor. Do us a favor. Support the Lovecast by going to omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bi woman. I've been dating this guy for about 10 months, and he's got a lot of kinks. And I'm open to pretty give most anything a try. But he's submissive and luckily not into pain, but he's into like a lot of extreme bondage, like mummification. He's got, I mean, we've done saran wrap stuff. He has a body cast that he made for himself. He has several chastity devices. He likes breath play, likes to be pissed on. I pissed in his mouth. I've pissed in his ass with a speculum meant for a cow because he likes really extreme stuff up his ass too. Like, 18-inch dildo fits up there. Like I'd never pegged anyone before him, and I do really enjoy it actually, but he wants such giant dildos that they won't even fit on the harnesses I've gotten. And yikes. Also, it takes a lot of time for him to clean out before one of these extreme ass sessions. So it makes me really anxious because like I have to commit 6 hours prior for him to do all this stuff. And then I feel like I have to perform. So that causes a lot of issues. And I just wonder if you think we could make it work or if you could suggest like an online sex therapist, maybe.
All right. I want to know what you left out. You got cow speculums in, pissing up his ass, 18-inch dildos, mummification, and then you basically hinted that there's a lot of things you weren't listing or including in the call. What didn't make the call? What got left out?
We have a lot of arguments where he says, like, you know, you're just not into this. Nobody's into this. He gets all upset. No one's into this. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's like, you don't let yourself have fun with it. Like I said, a lot of it is the danger aspect. Like I just heard something about someone getting their bowel punctured, and he just gets upset when I point that out. But I'm worried about his safety.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're taking your time and you're using a lot of lube, and he's a practiced giant ass toy bottom, you're unlikely to injure him. But that's not really the problem here. He's a submissive, and that's fine. You're exhausted, and that's not okay.
Yeah.
That he needs to have realistic expectations around the pace of this. And I think if the pace of it wasn't so frantic, that you would be a happier and more GGG and accommodating partner. But it seems like every time you do one thing, he asks for three more. And his expectations inflate along with whatever you're shoving up his ass. And that's what he needs to get in check. It's not that you aren't into his kinks. It's not that you don't enjoy them. You said you really enjoyed pegging him and you've kind of grown into enjoying some of his crazier kinks. But he's asking for too much too fast, and the escalation, it's just inconsiderate. What it telegraphs to you from him is these activities are more important to him than your comfort level, your sexual satisfaction. And it also signals that he's taking you for granted, and that's a libido killer. It is rare for a straight or bi male submissive to find a female partner who can do 10% or is up for doing 10% of the stuff you've already done with him.
Yeah.
And he's going to lose you and lose what you two might be capable of doing together, growing into together, enjoying together, if he can't slow his fucking roll.
Yeah, it seems like there's just, he always just wants, like he's always looking for the next thing. Like it's all, there's always new toys and, mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, one of the ways that a couple can keep sex exciting is to keep experimenting and trying new toys and trying new things. But the pace needs to be human. And he needs to just accept that he's out in front of you, that he's probably kinkier than 99.99% of the kinky people out there. And what he's asking you to do is to kind of grow into his kinks. He needs to give you some fucking time. He also needs to give you attention. He needs to give you vanilla sex. He needs to meet your needs. And if he needs to play a little loop in his head, you know, with his kinks or the thing he wants to try next, when you guys are having more relaxed sex, less involved sex, then that's what he's got to do. So you feel like your needs are being met too. He's your partner too. And that you're not just another toy. Another inanimate object that he's shoving up his ass.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that sometimes.
It's, the tone of your voice, when you listen to your call, when you hear your own question, you sound exhausted.
We were just fighting a lot, and yeah, I was feeling really exhausted about it. So it's kind of on an upswing, but basically I have to just like give it, you know.
How long have you been seeing him?
Just pound his ass. Like 10 months.
Okay. Do you think you could take 10 more months of this?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good in the relationship. So I've posted on Femdom, Reddit stuff. And of course all the chicks are like, get rid of him. Hey, he's kinking from the kink dispenser, topping from the bottom. All
right,
that shit.
Right. I'm not telling you to get rid of him. I'm suggesting
that I appreciate that.
Maybe you get a kink positive couples counselor, and this has to be a reset of his expectations, the demands he's making. And also, you know, if you say maybe we'll peg tonight and he preps, that doesn't obligate you to follow through. If you're not in the mood or it's not working for you for some reason, you get to bail even if he cleaned out. Just like, I don't know, you get to bail even if your partner took birth control, or you get to bail even if somebody ran to the hardware store and bought all the duct tape. You still get to bail if you're not feeling it. And if he's rushing you and it just feels like these ever escalating demands and you're afraid to do the next thing because you don't know what the thing after that is, he's not bringing you along. He's not letting you grow into kink together with him. He's hustling you along. He's pressuring you. And he's going to ruin this relationship if he can't get a handle on that.
Yeah.
And I got to say, you know, in Kinkland, there are time-saving devices. You know, if somebody's into mummification with the saran wrap and the duct tape, that takes forever. Get a sleep sack. Invest in a sleep sack. Sounds like he might have some of that higher-end, more extreme gear that can make, you know, the hour-and-a-half mummification process literally a two-minute zip the zipper, buckle the straps process, and it feels just like mummification. So maybe there are some time-saving toys you guys could be investing in. And then making dates. You know, on Friday night, we do this. Or on Friday night's a bondage night. Or, you know, every 2 weeks, it's a, like, let's go crazy on your ass. And that doesn't mean if we set a date that, you know, we have to follow through. It's just like, you know, maybe it's every other Sunday we do this, or maybe it's every other Wednesday we do this, Wednesday night. But if things intervene, if life intervenes and I'm not feeling it or you're not feeling it, we can do it on Thursday, but like roughly every 2 weeks. So he has that to look forward to. You can dirty talk about the kinky sex that's coming on Friday or next Wednesday when you're having basically vanilla sex. And sometimes for kinky people, that's enough to have dirty talk during vanilla sex about the kinky shit you've done or you're going to do is enough to make that vanilla sex also as fulfilling for them as the kinky sex is, that anticipation. That's something that a lot of kinky people are really good at, is the anticipation of a scheduled big kink night or kink event itself is exciting.
Yeah.
And so long as it doesn't ruin vanilla for you to talk about some of his kinks, to give him that, maybe that's one way to dial it back and for there to be less pressure on you. You just sound like someone who's under a lot of pressure. and you're going to crack eventually. And he needs to get a handle on that, because everything he fears, that you're not as kinky as he is, that he's going to drive you away, all those fears are going to come true if he can't get a grip.
Yeah, I've pretty much been, he said he needs it like at least once a week, but now it's turning into like a couple times a week. And I don't know. We had had a big session and like a day or two later, just a lot of stuff going on. He's like, should I clean out? And I rolled my eyes and boy, then he just like, I've ruined him for, I don't know.
He can clean out and have a solo session. And you don't have to roll your eyes about that. And then maybe if he's cleaned out and he's having a solo session and you feel like jumping in, you can. You just have to figure out a way to incorporate his kinks into your daily life so they're just present, but it's not so much pressure on you to perform.
Yeah.
Every single time. And, you know, most kinky people are subs and bottoms who want things done to them. And a lot of people who are tops are frustrated subs, or, you know, subs who are playing the top role because they have a sub's imagination. And it can be a higher degree of difficulty, a higher bar to clear when you ask somebody who's not kinky, who doesn't have a sub's imagination, to top you like this. And it takes time for that person to...
Yeah, I feel like, where do I get all these ideas?
Right, it takes time for you to learn. It takes time for you to learn and then maybe have some ideas of your own. But... 10 months. He's rushing it. He's rushing you. And he needs to knock that the fuck off and maybe going to a kink positive therapist who's kinky themselves, who will say that to him, will help him appreciate what he's got in you, where you are now, and not ruin where you could end up together by making too many demands of you in a single week.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it easy to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store without having massive web design or coding skills. Squarespace is your all-in-one solution for domains, websites, online stores, marketing tools, and analytics. They're kind of like your benevolent partner or co-creator. For instance, with their analytics tools, you can see exactly how many people are cruising into your site, how long they hung out there, what they clicked on, how much they spent, if you're selling stuff. Would you know how to set all that up on your own? No, you would not. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of helpful info and support that Squarespace offers. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. This is a 28-year-old from Canada. I have a pretty intense fetish that I always struggle to know when to bring up when I start seeing someone new. Basically, I have a kink within the gaining community. For me, it runs pretty deep where I picture myself gaining a ton of weight. It ties into a lot of like humiliation, both privately and publicly, that I enjoy to fantasize about. And while I definitely get off on this and have got off on this for years and have experimented a bit with it, both just solo by myself and with other partners, I know it's not something that I will pursue long-term. You know, I want to get married eventually. I want to have a family. And I know that being, you know, a 600-pound father is not exactly the most responsible choice to make. So... I know for me, it's just fancy, but I've run into it a couple times where I've told the previous partner and he was quite weirded out about it and just wouldn't ever even discuss it with me. I know that there's a lot of fat phobia, obviously, that ties into people's reaction to me telling them about this kink. And I'm seeing someone new who's just honestly an amazing person. He's bisexual and I'm the first quote unquote man that he's seeing. And he's coming into his own sexuality, and I've been very understanding and delicate about that process with him. But I definitely don't want to just scare him off being like, hey, I'm into this kink and you know, if you gain a bunch of weight, I'm really going to enjoy it. And I would never want him to do anything to his body that he didn't want to do, but I don't know. I'm just wondering where I strike that balance of being honest about my sexual desires and that reality without scaring someone else and being genuine.
Are these fantasies that you want to realize, that you want to act on, Or are these fantasies that you want to be indulged in, to jack off about, to fantasize about out loud with a partner without ever gaining 600 pounds or without ever feeding your partner to a point where they've gained 600 pounds? It's an important distinction, and you're going to want some clarity about that before you bring this up, before you roll it out for your new partner. It's obvious why someone might have these fantasies, particularly someone who's gay, where there's a lot of pressure in gay land to have a certain kind of body. There's a kind of body conformity. There's a kind of gay male beauty standard around, you know, abs and tits and shoulders. And people's erotic imaginations often push back against that. You know, where there are taboos, where there are norms, our transgressive erotic imaginations will sometimes want to violate those taboos and transgress against those norms. And so, yeah, of course, in a gay male culture that's hyper body conscious, some of us, some gay men, are going to react to that in a kind of erotic opposition and carry it to a fetishistic extreme. You see that all over with people's sexualities. You see our erotic imaginations rebelling against what it is we're told we're supposed to do, told we're supposed to like, told we're supposed to look like, told is right, told is wrong, told is pleasurable, told is painful. Our erotic imaginations are impishly contradictory in that way. They just like to flip over tables. They are puckish. And someone with a sophisticated understanding of how sexuality and eroticism works should be able to wrap his head around that. You might want to encourage your boyfriend, if you want to have this conversation, to read with you Dr. Jack Morin's book, The Erotic Mind, which really goes into how fantasies and fetishes work and where they come from and what's going on in our heads when something that seems so quote-unquote wrong becomes powerfully arousing. So it just might help to put that book into his hands. I recommend that book, The Erotic Mind, Dr. Jack Morin, if you're going to have this conversation with your new boyfriend. When you get to that point where you are laying all your kink cards down on the table. And when you lay your kink cards down on the table, you have to do it without succumbing to shame. Your boyfriend is very likely to still, at least at first, have a negative reaction. We are all raised in a very deeply sex negative and particularly kink negative culture. And a lot of people, when their partner lays their kink out on the table for the very first time, if it's not a kink that by some happy Yahtzee coincidence that they share, have a kind of gut impulse reflex negative reaction. You got to brace yourself for that. The first time you tell your boyfriend about your transgressive feeder gainer kink, he is very likely to be like, ugh, what? Ugh, no. Don't react to that. Don't take that to heart. Let him sit with it for a while. Often after a person whose initial reaction was negative to their partner's kink has some time to sit with it, has some time to think about it, is allowed to ask some questions of their partner about it, including asking their partner to explain why this thing that seems so out there or unlikely or not arousing for them arouses them. And if you can have those kinds of conversations, if you don't run from him or you're not too butthurt or wounded or upset, if his initial reaction is negative, he may come around. He may get to a place where even if he doesn't want to gain 600 pounds, he can indulge you through fantasy, through role play, through dirty talk, maybe through some nights of just absolute off the hook, ridiculous gluttony followed up by a lot of cardio and a lot of hitting the gym and a lot of well-balanced meals so that he doesn't gain the weight or you don't gain the weight, depending on who's feeding and who's being fed, when you guys have one of those nights where he indulges you with not the reality of having gained 600 pounds, but the threat of having gained 600 pounds. You know, listening to your call, I was thinking of a friend of mine whose ultimate fantasy is to be castrated. But what's sexy for him is the threat, because of course that's something you can only do once, and he's really not interested in it actually happening. And as much as some part of his, you know, erotic reptile brain would really like that to happen, his higher intelligence knows that that's actually not something that he wants to happen. He doesn't want to have to take hormones the rest of his life. He doesn't want to live with the consequences of this thing that he didn't choose to turn him on. It just kind of does turn him on. And what he wound up with, and I think I've talked about him once before on the show, was a partner who threatens him with it. but doesn't do it, and that he can trust not to do it, trust to put him in positions where he could, if he chose at that moment, talking about bondage, of course, castrate him, and threatens in that moment to castrate him, but then doesn't do it. Seems to me that if you want to have your kink and have a healthy body too, and a healthy body can be a larger body, but you know what I mean. There's a difference between 250, 300, and 600 pounds. If you want to have your kink in a relatively healthy body too, you can find somebody who can go there with you to threaten you with the 600 pounds of weight gain and enjoy the threat and enjoy your response to that threat and indulge each other or be indulged yourself in that way. Get your boyfriend a copy of The Erotic Mind. Might help if you read it too. Recommend it actually to everybody out there listening right now. And good luck. Good luck with the conversation that I think you can have and should have with your bisexual boyfriend. Just be braced for that initial negative reaction and don't head for the hills. Don't run screaming. Stay put and keep talking.
Hey, Dan, I have a quick question. So if you were to put a metal butt plug in the freezer, would it stick to your skin when you inserted it? Because doesn't, you know, wet or moist skin stick to frozen surfaces like in A Christmas Story where his tongue gets stuck on the pole?
If you want to play with a cold butt plug, and I can certainly understand why someone would want to, that sensation isn't necessarily unpleasant. Put it in the fridge. Don't put it in the freezer. That said, even if you did put it in the freezer, by the time you took it out of the freezer, by the time you lubed it up so you could begin to put it into somebody's butt, it's going to gradually warm up. And you'll notice that the lubricant that you put on even a freezing cold butt plug doesn't turn to ice. And so it is going to lube it up on its way in. I wouldn't recommend it. It does seem risky. You know, one of the things we want to do with holes as we begin to put toys in them, or before we put toys in them, is warm them up literally and figuratively. And a cold toy can be a shock, but not an unpleasant one. You can put a metal dildo into a bucket of, you know, ice water and, you know, eat somebody's hole for a little while and then lube it up and then slide that dildo in. And that sensation of the ice cold but not frozen solid dildo sliding into that warm hole can be intensely pleasurable. Please go slowly. Please ice water. Please fridge. Please not freezer. The difference between the butt plug you pull out of the bucket of ice water and the pole in A Christmas Story that the kid gets his tongue stuck to, the difference is ambient temperature. The pole is outside in freezing weather. The butt plug that you pulled out of the bucket of ice water is inside. The ambient temperature inside is going to be room temperature. Hopefully you're playing in a heated apartment, a heated house. It's 68 degrees inside where the butt plug is, as opposed to 20 below outside where the frozen pole is that you don't want to touch with your tongue. You're probably going to be okay playing with that butt plug pulled out of the bucket of ice water. It's not going to be 30 below and its temperature will be rapidly rising after you remove it from the bucket of ice water, as you handle it, as you apply lubricant to it. If you begin to put that butt plug into somebody that you've chilled and you feel any resistance at all, stop. Before we get to listener response calls, let's read your tweets. Dakota Harper, VIP tweets, I start my Tuesdays listening to the Savage Lovecast, and so this morning's episode, featuring a person looking for a companion for their dad in Austin, Texas, really thrilled me. To the caller, there are absolutely full-service sex workers out there who offer cooking as part of our GFE. I'm happy to offer myself as tribute. GFE, of course, stands for Girlfriend Experience, a style of service some sex workers, like Dakota Harper, VIP, provide. Last week, I talked about how much I don't like the word compersion, sometimes used to mean the opposite of jealousy, sometimes used to mean the opposite of schadenfreude. Kendra Holiday tweets, hey, at Fake Dan Savage, do you like the word confelicity better? And she quote tweets this, confelicity, a much underused word meaning delight in someone else's happiness, the opposite of schadenfreude. I like it, Kendra. I like it a whole lot better than I like compersion, which I do not like at all. And finally, Liliana Bagaletio, forgive me for likely butchering your last name. Liliana tweets, just heard on British TV the best term that has so many applications for your advice podcast, Dan, dicknotized. You are welcome. And love the sack lunch, Dan. Let's have it again. Dicknotized, like hypnotized by your dick or by a dick. An amazing word. I have a feeling I'm going to be using it on the podcast a lot. Thank you, Liliana. And thank you for coming to our first sack lunch last Thursday. More than 800 people came to our first online hangout exclusively for Magnum Savage Lovecast subscribers last week. So we are for sure going to be doing it again every first Thursday at noon Pacific time. Go to savagelovecast.com and subscribe if you aren't already a Magnum subscriber. And then you can join me and Liliana and everybody else at the next sack lunch. Thank you very much to everybody who tweeted about the show or posted about the show to your social media accounts. We really appreciate it. And now listener response calls.
Hey, Dan, I am calling with a response call to the woman who called in episode 758, who is concerned about her ability to have big orgasms during partnered sex. And the main concern is having to have visual pornography playing while she's having partnered sex. One suggestion that I had, because I've actually had this problem before, is to maybe start reading erotica instead of watching a lot of pornography. By doing this, you will have to visualize a bit more the sexy things that you are reading instead of actually seeing them. So when you're having partnered sex, you can visualize all of the sexy things you want to visualize instead of actually having to see them. I did find this helpful, and maybe it'll help her too.
This is a response call for the pregnant mom worried about having a boy. I have a son and a daughter, and when I was pregnant with my son, everyone would tell me the same thing. Oh, he's going to be so different than your daughter, so rowdy, only going to like cars, etc. And it annoyed the hell out of me. I'd like to add to what Dan said and encourage you to give your baby all the things, not just the stereotypical boy stuff, and see what he gravitates toward. My daughter liked cars way more than my son does, and now my son is almost two, and his favorite things are baking and cats. Not cars, kitty cats. You got this, Mama. It's all going to be okay.
This is a comment for the woman who found out she was having a boy and was really disappointed. Dan, I think your answer was completely spot on, and I agree with everything you said. But I just wanted to add one thing. As a new-ish mother myself, I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. I would just say to you, caller, that motherhood is a wild, wonderful, and completely bewildering journey. You said that you were disappointed that you wouldn't have the motherhood that you thought you would have. And I would just say to you, with all the love in the world, nothing about motherhood is going to be what you imagined. There's things that are far better than you could ever imagine, things that are far harder than you could ever imagine. And your children are their complete own people, regardless of how you raise them or what you do with them. They are their own human beings, no matter what gender. So I just say that to say maybe you can think of this disappointment as the opening salvo to a motherhood journey that is going to be full of surprises. And hopefully you can embrace that and enjoy that. And congratulations on your pregnancy.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. If you haven't already gotten your tickets for Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 3, now is the time. Watch some of the sexiest, kinkiest, dirtiest, and funniest short films from the last 16 years of Hump by going to humpfilmfest.com and getting your tickets now. And we've put out the call for submissions for Hump 2021. Go to humpfilmfest.com and click on submit for everything you need to know about getting your short, dirty film into Hump. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Debbie Herbenick on Twitter at Debbie Herbenick. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for joining.